discussions with Ajahn Chuchin in Bangkok, October 2007, after the India trip. Recorded and edited by Jonathan and Sarah. Speakers include Venerable Panyabahulo, Betty, Ivan, Christine, Sarah, Sukin, Jill, Azita, and Jonathan.
The first question that I have concerns a lot of postings that I made, because I find that the idea that everything arises by conditions, which I don't doubt at all, and that we have accumulations, means that everything to me seems to be determined, predetermined, that there is no way out, because you either have the conditions, suitable conditions arise, or you have the accumulations, and if you don't, that's it. And it really doesn't matter what you do, because everything is subject to conditions. And I gave a copy of a survey of Paramatta Dharma to a good friend of mine, David, who you met in Chiang Mai, tall American. And I can't any longer get a straight answer out of him. For example, when are you coming back to the temple? Well, it all depends on conditions. And the thing is that I see that there's a big confusion between Paramatta language and conventional language. And Prabhupada Tat, or Buddhadasa in English, used to talk about Pasakon Pasadhamma, Pasakon Pasapam. But I gave the example in one letter of the Islamic people in Khartoum when I was flying back to England once, and I asked, when does this flight arrive in London? And the lady told me 16:05 inshallah. In other words, 16:05 if God is willing. Now, here to me was an excellent use of both levels of reality, but not confusing the two together, saying, well, the plane will arrive at this time, but subject to the conditions, i.e. in their case, it's up to Allah. Now, the Buddha seems to always talk in conventional language, and his very last words, work out your own salvations for yourself, strive on with diligence, and so on. This is very conventional language. And this jumping backwards and forwards between Paramatta language and conventional language, I think engenders not only confusion, but many people can use it as a denial of responsibility, of not having to be responsible for their actions or their decisions or anything else. And that's the question.
If we can understand life and instances as the absolute reality, is it possible to understand seeing now as just a reality, instead of talking about story about things and people? Because at this moment, that is that which we don't know yet about it, like seeing. Do we know seeing as it is, or just no attention to the reality of seeing at all? It is just seeing. Who sees and what sees, no understanding at all. So if there is no understanding of reality, the absolute reality, can there be the understanding of circumstances or happenings or story at all? Because it's only thinking. There is thinking for sure, but what conditions thought or thinking or the object of thinking? For example, right now, there is thinking. Without the absolute reality, can there be any thinking? No one, no thing at all, no thinking. So what is thinking? Is it belong to anyone thinking, or it's conditioned to think this or that? Uncontrollable. Can anyone know about one's next moment of thinking? See? But we have to use concept in order to understand different realities. because they are different, they're conditioned, they arise and fall away in split seconds. They're quite different from one another. Whatever is conditioned has arisen, fallen away, never come back. But we can use many terms and concepts to represent different realities as they are. Like seeing is not moment of hearing, not the same moment of thinking, but they are not self. They do not belong to anyone, they are just conditioned, arising and falling away.
I was just talking to Ivan about this, and there seems to be nothing that I can do to develop this ability.
Excuse me, because there is no I, but there are different conditions for any moment, any reality. Like seeing, hearing, who can have seeing and hearing at will? No one at all. So can we say that I can have this and that, I can make this and that up, or I can create this and that at all?
Ajahn, how can I get to a point where the I disappears? How can I develop in such a way that the I no longer gets in the way?
Yes, when there is the idea of I, there must be attachment to such idea. So attachment is real. And how come attachment without ignorance? Since now there is no understanding about any reality right now, so it appears as something stay permanent, like book and flowers and things. So as it's permanent, there must be attachment to such permanent things until there is right understanding to understand the difference between each one. Like seeing is just a moment, a conditioned reality, different from thinking.
But nothing can be done to develop that understanding.
This moment of understanding will develop until it can penetrate the true nature of reality right now.
How will it develop?
At this moment of understanding, the more there is the listening about realities and there is more understanding, right understanding develops until it can penetrate the true nature of reality right now. Because it seems so real, if we would say, seeing arises and falls away, so common. If seeing does not arise, how come to be anything appearing as object of seeing right now? So seeing arises, so it sees. And it's in the moment of seeing only which that which is object of seeing can be seen. At the other moment, like hearing, the object of seeing does not appear at all. But sound right now appears. It means that there must be moment of the arising of hearing to hear it. Otherwise, sound cannot be heard at all. And this is right understanding, little by little. When it's so true, right understanding can develop so that it can become detached from taking as something permanent. Because each moment is not permanent at all, just one very short moment at a time.
But there's nothing. I was saying to Ivan, well, what can I do to facilitate this? And of course, there is no I to facilitate.
Okay. What kind of I can do? Because seeing cannot do anything apart from seeing. And hearing cannot do other thing apart from hearing. So what I can do? Because seeing sees, hearing hears, thinking thinks.
But what changes seeing with an eye into seeing without an eye? What changes? How can that change?
Right understanding.
Which
is different from wrong understanding.
And how does right understanding arise?
Whenever there is understanding about reality.
If you're understanding more now by listening to Ajahn, that is a moment of right understanding. Even though it's not as deep as you might wish for, it's still right understanding.
I can understand what Ajahn is saying, I just don't know how to make the transcendence between the ignorant level I am at now and to what Ajahn is saying.
But if you're understanding what she's saying, there is some level of understanding.
That I can understand, how can I say, that the mind understands, but the actual, or the perception does, but the mind is always in the way. The mind is always a barrier between the seeing and the experience of seeing.
What you take for eye is thinking, right?
Yeah, part of it.
Mm-hmm. So it's a moment of thinking different from seeing.
Yeah.
And there are two kinds of thinking, right thinking and wrong thinking. The wrong thinking cannot understand reality right now because it takes reality for something permanent, like people and things. But when there is some understanding about reality as it is, for example, what is seen is so real because it's now is seen, right? Just that which can be seen only. Nothing more than that. So it doesn't matter who will take it for something, but actually it's that which is seen only.
And this, whenever there is, like for instance, a moment of whatever level of understanding, that is a condition for a moment perhaps of right understanding to arise later on, further right understanding. Okay, so once there is some whatever level, okay, a right understanding might arise. That acts as a condition for right understanding to arise later on, at some point, whenever the conditions allow it to arise. Because we know everything works under conditions. Rather than inshallah, as say the Muslims, or if God willing, and so forth, it's a matter of conditions. And there's 24 kinds of conditions, and it's basically the understand or the acceptance of the idea that whatever mental or physical realities arise, it's all because of conditions, and the falling away of them is all because of conditions. And if when you hear that, and then you contemplate about it, you think deeply about it, that is also condition for the arising of perhaps a satipatthana moment to arise later on, where there is an understanding of a reality arising at a certain moment, and understanding the nature of that reality so that there's a reduction in the idea of self. A little bit.
Sorry, just to repeat, but why did the Buddha say strive or work hard for your own salvation? Why did he? Who is striving in that case?
The Buddha, when the Buddha spoke those words, he knew conditions. He knew that it would condition someone to do something. Whether you come here, you came from Chiang Mai, you came here, it wasn't the self that did that. It's just because there's an interest in Dhamma. And you will investigate Dhamma because there's an interest in Dhamma. And everything the Buddha said was it conditions people to react a certain way. He understood conditions. That's why he spoke Dhamma. And if he hadn't spoken the Dhamma, then we wouldn't be here now talking about it. So it's conditions, right? So he says strive. it doesn't mean that you have to mentally strive, because sometimes you might want to strive, but you don't have the energy to strive, right?
Yeah.
But then there are other times when you just strive. Without, just because it's conditioned there to be that way. So I think it's just the fact that the Buddha understood conditions and he spoke the Dhamma, and that conditions us to reflect on it and then do things.
And the audience knew the difference between right effort and wrong effort. They wouldn't mistake wrong effort for right effort.
They wouldn't.
They wouldn't.
Yes. Thank you everybody.
Su Chin, in your Paramattha Dhammas, you say that agusala is latent even in Bhavanga Chitta, and so on. And I think about that conditioning process. This leads on from the Pras question in a way. And I think to myself that there is so much gilate that, yes, it's underlying every moment, except when it is not latent, it is full-blown in jhavana or in vipaka. And I think, is it so that there must also be latent gusala, surely? Yeah, that they must be latent as well, and that they're all of them latent, but there is more accumulation of agusala, and therefore that is the one that tends to come up most. Is this correct? Yeah. It's not just agusala that is latent in Pavanga.
Otherwise, there would not be time for enlightenment at all.
That's why I thought this might be. Yeah, so the gusala chitta or gusala is also latent, lying dormant, the same as the defilements are dormant in every moment of consciousness almost. But that the reason that it seems as though it is such a slow process, maybe, is that the gusala is so agusala is so strong. It happens so much in a day that mostly agusala is conditioned in our daily lives.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's only with right understanding that we actually think more about dana, sila, and bhavana.
The gusala must be extremely latent in the existence of it. Oh, sorry, I keep forgetting.
These days, we look at the time of the Buddha and see people get enlightened very quickly, becoming arahat, becoming sotapanna, thousands of them. And we tend to think, okay, we should do it within 7 days or 1 month or 3 months or whatever, like them. But actually, it's Chira Kala Bhavana, which Nina often quotes, which means long time development. So for us at this time, a little bit of progress is good, really. But we're conditioned by the teachers these days to think, try very hard, and you'll get to become what you want to become very quickly, but it's just not realistic. It's just not the way things are. So I think we should bear in mind that it's a slow and difficult and long process, because it's so profound, and because there may not be enough conditions to become enlightened in this life even if we understand what the path is.
Sorry, this is just an afterthought. It's just that, you know, what I'm sorry, I have to use it's habit, it's bad. Is that you know, I've been told for 20 plus years that unless you actually attain something, you know, mukha or whatever else, that basically all the thinking and the knowledge that we acquire just disappears at the moment of death, and then that's it. You know, there's no, it doesn't come into the next life. It just disappears. You know.
But then, how does karma vipaka work? How does all the kusala and akusala gets accumulated? I mean, when there's thinking about anything, it's rooted in either akusala or kusala roots, and those just don't disappear. They have an effect, if not as kamapatha, as producing vipaka, it still accumulates. So what disappears might be the memory about in terms of words and knowledge, but not the understanding or misunderstanding. That accumulates.
Not the lopa.
But neither the panya.
I'm sorry for being personal, but just when I was a very young child, really young, I remember standing in the garden in a terraced house in East London, looking over the other gardens, and I just had this tremendous sadness, and I just felt so very old. And that I could not explain as a child. But only since coming into contact with the Dharma does it begin to make sense. But that experience was absolutely vivid. I was so old. I felt I was so old. And the sadness, the absolute sadness that went with it, is in this, and that just came out of nowhere, and in a way that kind of had some strong motivation, because I, as a young boy, I was very involved in Christianity and everything until I became a teenager and couldn't believe those things anymore. But this constant searching, because that vision or that experience was absolutely still crystal clear to me now. But there was no wisdom with it. I didn't understand it.
Related to that, I wanted to ask John a question about, can we say that when the level of sotapanna is reached, that the kusala accumulations at that point will outweigh the akusala accumulations? Is that true or not true?
What do you mean?
Well, all right. When the level of sotapanna is reached,
at that moment, yes, sotapattimakkacitta arises.
Mm-hmm. Can we say that from that point on, for the citta of that particular being, that there are more kusala accumulations than akusala accumulations after that point?
Because there would be at most 7 births.
Right, yeah. So that's true. Mm-hmm.
And 4 of the akusala cittas won't rise again.
Yeah.
No more lopa vittiti.
So
but since there's no more of that,
then
the conditions for...
So we cannot say that once sotapanna is reached, that the persons
have more kusala, yeah, because less akusala.
Yeah.
No, so
cannot say that.
Okay. No more wrong view at all.
Right. There's no more wrong view.
So
then
there are conditions for right view.
Okay.
You were mentioning about the wrong thinking, which takes visible object for person and things And we read about all the wrong views falling under eternity and annihilation views.
So on. Okay.
And, for example, at this moment, when there's wrong view, it seems that things last, things are permanent. And so in the text we read about when there's craving for visible object with a view of lastingness, of eternal, it's called craving for becoming. Can you explain why it is craving for becoming, or tanha, in that sense?
When wrong view does not arise.
When wrong view does not arise. When wrong view doesn't arise, there isn't any idea of anything lasting or of continuing on. So just at moments of wrong view, please. And what about annihilation view at this moment? If there is wrong view, it assumes that the object breaks up, but
no more life.
But how is it applied to this moment? How about realities at this moment? Because we talk about, when there's wrong view, taking visible object for being something permanent, such as the cup or the glass. So this applies at this moment. What about the annihilation view at this moment?
Can this moment arise without any conditions?
No.
This is the answer.
That's it. Okay, so it just comes back to the understanding of conditions again.
Can anyone show me how to try very, very hard to understand seeing right now as not self?
You know, what I said earlier is, do we have to keep repeating, like, for example, this is not me, this I am not, this is not myself, or this is not mine, this I am not, this is... I mean, do we have to keep repeating these things all the time like a mantra?
Okay, if someone would say that seeing is not self 100 times, is that the way to understand seeing is not self?
Many meditation systems seem to advocate that. I don't know. I just don't feel that. I feel bad about using I, but I don't know what else to do.
No, please.
I don't know any way else how to do it. I mean, I don't know how to.
Don't try not to use I.
No. I mean, other than keep repeating to myself, which is what I was told to do in Burma, whenever, you know, serious depression arose, just keep reminding yourself, this is just nature, it's not you, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And with the hope that in the end that will become part of the automatic habit pattern.
But the point is that when it becomes something that's a habit, what's being formed, the mantra itself can be said with an I. And so the problem is not the words you use, it's the attitude towards the moment, towards the reality. It's taking it for I and then trying to say it that it's not I, with I. It's not just telling yourself when you have a certain experience and saying that it's not I in order to get rid of it, because that's an I doing it.
But how is it possible for Bahia and Lokiputta to understand immediately you know, when the Buddha said, when seeing is just seeing and hearing is just hearing and so on, how were they able to immediately just, that's it, now I understand? Because to me, I don't even see seeing as just seeing.
It would have to be panya. If the reality is known as just that reality, then panya knows that there's no self there in that reality. And the fact that the reality falls away knows it doesn't belong to anybody. Also, can't be owned. Because there has to be panya that has to arise. There had to be conditions for panya to arise in those days. But for us, there's no panya that arises right now.
And there's no way we can
Well, there's no panya arising at the moment, knowing the reality for what it really is.
And there's no way to develop that.
No. I mean, we can... It will happen when there's conditions for it to happen.
But to know that ignorance is arising in self is already a level of understanding.
I don't know. Do you think this is the result of our upbringing, this Protestant work ethic, that, you know, if you work, keep working, you're going to be successful in the end? I don't know. I mean,
I think that it's just the accumulated wrong view and the clinging to the idea of self, and it's no different whether one's brought up in England or brought up in Thailand. There's such a strongly accumulated wrong view of self, and that's the obstacle, because that is what always makes one want to be able to do something instead of accept conditioned realities. It's not Thai, it's not English, it's just a characteristic of the Dharma.
Universal problem. I've been reading some of these publications of the Harvard mind life science debates between neuroscientists, psychiatrists and so on, and the Dalai Lama and various Tibetan meditation masters, and the Abhidharma is held up as being a very healthy, a very an excellent model of the mind. And but one of the things that came out of one of the discussions was the argument that somebody was advocating, it might have been what's his name, Coleman, the editor of Destructive Emotions and those kind of saying that it may be that it's necessary that you have to develop a very healthy ego before you can get rid of it. You know, something like that. I mean,
did the Buddha say anything like that?
I think we've all got lots of healthy egos. I think we have healthy egos, lots of us, already.
No need to develop. Too much of it is very unhealthy.
The thing is that people have different accumulations. You see that in everybody. Some people can have great accumulations to read. Other people have great accumulations just to listen, and whatever those accumulations are, that's what you're stuck with. And some people are very fortunate because they have a lot of energy to listen to Dhamma a lot, and to study it a lot, and to contemplate it a lot. And then other people might not do. They might want to, but they can't. They don't have that accumulation. So it's not a matter of that we say we're going to do it and then do it. It's a matter of the accumulations you have in the start point.
I have a question about sati, and I think I always ask it in a thousand different ways. And I'm very interested that when you talk to us of seeing consciousness, it's something that we experience on a daily basis, you know, many, many, many times. So I can start to understand, at least thinking can start to understand, even if it's not at the level of satyam dhamma, something about the characteristic of seeing consciousness and visible object. But in the case of sati, I think this is a little harder, because if you don't know really what the characteristic of it is, and it's not appearing, you know, on a regular basis, like seeing or hearing or visible object and so on, it's very difficult for me to think about it with right understanding, in the same way that I can think about seeing consciousness or hearing consciousness or thinking itself.
Do we have to mind so much about sati? What is it? Without understanding?
Oh,
right, right.
Is it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kutsujin really is implying that, you know, why should I worry so much about it? I ask this question time and time again, you know. What is it, Kutsujin? What is it that's meant to be developing? You know, tell us more, tell me. And she goes, what is it? And I go, yeah, this is my attachment to having me having more sati. I want to know, have I had it? Have I had it? That's what I want to know. And she, of course, she's right. I just developed sati.
Patience, too.
Patience.
What about right understanding? No one thinks about that. Just sati, sati.
Thinking?
Any level. Is it real? Right understanding?
Yes.
What does it understand?
It must understand the characteristic.
Of what?
Of what's arising right now.
Now? What?
Now.
Of what? Of what now?
Hearing, whatever is here now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Without understanding, so, even theoretically,
yeah,
can there be the penetration of it?
Mm-hmm.
So forget about sati.
Focus on what is now.
Understanding is there. Yeah. If there is no understanding, it's useless.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's the hidden lopa again.
So I'm getting confused. What's the difference between understanding and panya, wisdom?
Same.
But we can't force this, right? You can't.
However, it is developed by listening to the Dhamma.
And understanding.
It is one of the ways that panya develops.
And what other ways?
Directly inciting reality is panya, and that leads to more panya.
Sorry, the regular.
You asked about the other way?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, other ways, because I'm, you know, here I am thinking, when I return to my little mountain top.
Okay, the other way is wrong way.
It just feels kind of helpless. What do I walk around all the time just trying to see?
Excuse me, it's wrong because it does not understand anything. It just wants to.
It just wants.
Mm-hmm.
It wants to. It's so badly to understand.
Yeah, sure. That's
so that's wrong. That's
wrong. It's just more wanting.
But isn't that necessary to even continue on the path? Isn't there has to be some motivation?
Chanda. What's?
Right. It doesn't have to be lopa though.
What's chanda? Yeah, what's
the chanda? And it must arise.
Yeah.
The right understanding.
It seems like we try to understand much more than we can understand. For example, now there is seeing, no understanding of seeing at all, but we try to know what conditions sit, how many jetasikas are there, and what kind of paccaya or condition is each one beyond our understanding of reality right now.
when if I want to go to, say, Morchit bus station or Donglai airport, is it necessary for me to study a map of the world?
Yes.
It is, yes. Before I travel. Must.
In order to understand seeing as it is, there must be hearing about the true nature of seeing and know how it is conditioned, not self at all.
So we need to have a thorough understanding of citta, cetasika.
That is so firmly established. No more doubt about even intellectual understanding about anotherness.
And it's not about accumulating more words, reading more and having more knowledge, but understanding it at that level. Even if you hear the same thing over and over about seeing now, it's about understanding seeing now, but at the level of pariyati. There is seeing, but you need to hear about it again and again to develop more understanding of it at that level. That is what leads to the higher level of experiencing directly, satipatthana. The thing is that we don't understand this, and we seek to have satipatthana without first understanding what satipatthana knows, without understanding what is the object of understanding. And then we go on to practice thinking that if we note the bodily posture, that's developing understanding. But that's wrong theory, wrong intellectual understanding. And we forget. Even after hearing about sati, knowing realities, lobha takes us into the wrong direction. We still are lured to methods of practice, talking about breath, noting the breath. And we forget that what sati knows. Sati knows heat, cold, motion, pressure. But we forget. So we need to hear, be reminded over and over. It's not like mantra, but because there are conditions for hearing, there can be conditions for more understanding. And that's what we need to appreciate. Not try to get to experience more than what is there arising now.
So there's nothing wrong in noting seeing, is there? When.
But is it right or wrong? It's wrong if it's wrong. If it's wrong, if it's lopa instead of sati, it can't be right.
Can that be the intellectual understanding about realities right now instead of trying to penetrate the true nature of reality right now?
I mean, you know, what I'm beginning to see is just, you know, intellectual. I don't have the banya to do it, but something is beginning to make sense, yeah.
And what's the difference between the intellectual understanding and the penetration of reality? Realities are realities. They arise, they fall away. But the understanding of the realities are more or less depending on accumulation. As one knows that there is no attention, no awareness or no understanding about a visible object right now as just visible object. Thus one just wants to penetrate the arising and falling away of visible object or object of seeing without any understanding at all. That's why the Buddha taught for 45 years.
And can we say, Ajahn, that's one of the reasons that we need to hear so much is that, for example, we hear about visible object, and we think that we must experience it. And in fact, there is tanha, there's thinking arising. So we don't think to know tanha, we don't think to know thinking.
So we need to hear a lot in the sense that there is a reality, one or the other, right now. And it can be visible object, it can be sound, it can be thinking, it can be feeling, it can be all these. So while we're trying to experience certain things, other realities are in fact arising and appear, but we don't know.
When we talk about listening to the teachings, there is the conventional idea of here we are in the room and we're listening. And then, to be a little bit more precise, it refers only to when the teachings are explained in a way that is appropriate to our level, association with the right person, and depending on past merit, whether we can appreciate it. And then to be even more precise in Paramatta terms, I've heard you referring to Sutta Maya Panya, and Chinta Maya Panya is actually just a moment of hearing sound, Sutta, and Yoniso Manisakara, wise attention to what is heard. So when we talk about listening to the teaching, can we say all these levels apply?
Yeah, gradually.
Getting closer and closer
to the absolute realities. For example, now, are we getting closer to understand visible object and seeing? Or no understanding at all? When there is no understanding, how can there be the penetration of these realities? This is the only way to eliminate lobha, avicca, and wrong view. Very, very gradually, but it works. Now it's working.
Can we put it this way, that we are always thinking about the next moment instead of this moment? Instead of knowing whatever is conditioned to arise now, we're thinking about how to have more sati.
Right. It's just that, you know, all these different meditation techniques over the years have all stressed that if you develop sati, then understanding will arise. And now what Ajahn is saying is the opposite, that you need to have understanding before you can have, or rather, you know, the meditation techniques tell you that you will get insight by developing awareness and so on. But this is the other way around. In a way, it's like you need understanding before you can even penetrate to the true nature of something.
The beginning levels of understanding is pariyatti understanding and so forth. Okay, so that has to be like the Eightfold Path starts with right understanding. So there has to be that basis of having the Dhamma correctly explained, perhaps, to you, and then that becomes the condition for later on more right understanding to arise.
So put it another way, we hear the Dhamma, and there's either right understanding or wrong understanding. If there's wrong understanding, then there's wrong practice. If there's right understanding of what we hear, whether or not practice arises doesn't matter. We understand that it's conditioned. But if we hear and we want to get something, then the understanding at the level of intellectual understanding is wrong.
Well, if we hear and we understand correctly, then it is right practice, in a sense.
In a sense.
I mean, there's no other practice. It's just a question of the level at which the understanding arises.
A friend
our discussion list often makes the point that in suttas, for example, in the Anguttara Nikaya, there are many contemplations which are not about the present dharmas, and he gives examples such as suttas in which one's urged to contemplate illness, old age and death in personal terms, or contemplate what one has done, said and thought, and whether this will lead to a shelter from fear on one's deathbed, or to contemplate what one often does and thinks in this life, and so on. Can we say again, like the listening, again, it depends on the level of understanding, at what level it's appreciated. For some people, it's just a conventional encouragement to good deeds and actions, but for those who can, it's an appreciation of different realities at this moment. So would one just say that it relates to all degrees of understanding?
What is contemplating? See, not just contemplation, but what is it?
With understanding. Yeah.
So the Buddha taught us to develop panya, right understanding. Buddha means panya, understanding, awakening to the truth.
If it's just about conventional wisdom, we wouldn't bother to teach it, because anyone can teach that. So if it's not about the understanding of Paramatta Dharmas as a matter, then it's useless, I think.
Well, we had that discussion a few weeks ago about the Sigala Loda Sutta, where the boy was taught by the Buddha how to pay respects to his parents and so on and so forth. And I think you said in that case, that's all the boy could understand. So the Buddha taught to his level. And that wasn't about Paramatta Dharma, I think, but that was a possible cause for later, for sati at that level. And of course later, the boy may develop higher levels of understanding. But I don't think the Sigala Bada, I think you said the Sigala Bada Sutta wasn't about Paramatta Dharma or so much?
No Paramatta Dharma at all?
It was.
Some level of understanding what's right and what's wrong, what's wholesome and what's unwholesome.
But not about anatta and Paramatta.
It seems like there's no teaching about realities at all. But without the understanding of realities, can anyone understand better? So can anyone record all that Buddha taught, each word and the details of the story, or just the subject about the paying respect to different directions?
Well,
so that that person will develop understanding little by little.
Mm. So that Sigala Bada Sutta was about anatta?
It's like in a sutta, when Buddha saw boys about 500 or less, and we don't mind about the number, and after his words, the boys became enlightened, just that in the sutta.
Mm-hmm.
No more or much more about realities, which was not recorded.
You're saying some of those suttas that Buddha spoke more, but they didn't record all the words?
Sometimes I think that it's as short. But after that, those boys became enlightened,
mm-hmm.
not by understanding realities or...
Must be, that's the only way.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. So even the Sigala Bada Sutta...
Any sutta.
Okay.
At the end of the sutta, when someone became enlightened.
Did someone become... Yeah, okay. But sometimes the sutta didn't become enlightened? Yeah.
The sutta is very short. Mm. As short as...
It happened,
yeah.
Mm.
So are you saying that sutta... I thought when we discussed it a few weeks ago...
Okay. Now, let us read. Can anyone become enlightened?
Yes.
Today?
Like those boys?
If there were the conditions. I mean, theoretically, mm-hmm. someone
yeah.
could. I don't mean anyone would.
So something much more in there.
So there is something, even within the Sigalavada Sutta, which is a netta.
Anyone who became enlightened, not just by not knowing any reality at all. Mm-hmm.
She's saying it can be understood at different levels.
Mm-hmm.
It's implied, you're saying it's implied.
Even in that setup, because I thought you said when we discussed it before, it wasn't.
I think that when Panya has accumulated enough to understand reality, it doesn't matter what words one heard.
Well, Anatta Pindika became Sotapanna, and the Buddha didn't seem to speak about Anatta.
Seems, but they...
But seems it didn't, but he did become enlightened, so somehow he got something.
Not like anyone who does not understand anything at all.
Yeah, because he had such great wisdom. Wasn't there another woman who just heard the word Buddha or something, and she became Sotapanna almost because she had she was so close, so such great accumulation.
And what about Sariputta himself?
That teaching for Sariputta is directly about anatta, so I can understand that one easier than some of the others.
And for those who have developed already, they can hear any word and they can become enlightened.
What exactly do you mean by accumulations? Kusala vipaka?
Citta arises one at a time. And this one conditions the next one after it has fallen away. From moment to moment, all experiences are accumulated.
You see, one thing that follows on from what Robert's saying is that I think it was a monk, but my memory is not anywhere near as good as it used to be, who couldn't understand anything. And the Buddha gave him a piece of cloth and told him to keep rubbing it until it was clean. He became an arahant. Now, what happened there?
It was based on his past accumulations.
Yeah. The story in the commentaries is he had huge accumulations of wisdom, but when he was a monk, he told another monk something. Can you remember, Sarah, what he told? He did something to another monk about something, some akusala to another monk, so that when he was born in this life, it was like that akusala vipaka clouded his wisdom. And, the wisdom was accumulated and still latent, but it was clouded. And but the Buddha knew what could unlock it, so to speak.
Yeah, it was made clear that he'd listened to the Abhidharma in incredible detail for aeons and aeons, and so it wasn't as though he just suddenly heard the right words or had the right object out of the blue. Nothing's happened.
Yeah, because I'm thinking I've done an incredible amount of washing in 61 years.
Haven't
<and
I'm laughs> done anything.
No, right. Yeah, you're not doing nothing.
It's all conditions, you know. The Buddha had the understanding of what conditions were needed in this particular instance to be there for that particular man to reach enlightenment. We don't have that kind of, but he had, and so he knew. This had to happen in order for that to happen, etc. Okay, so that's why that could happen in that particular way with the cloth, but it just demonstrates that everything is related to conditions that maybe all, for instance, in the case of the woman who heard one word, whatever it was, all the conditions, most, practically all 99.99, whatever, of the conditions were there, and all they needed was one word to be the condition, the hearing of that particular, whatever hearing that was, for the condition, as a condition to finally reach the enlightenment. I mean, it's all conditions, whatever it is.
Is it really just one word?
I forget the story, but it was something rather improbable, shall we say, but I believe it.
Yeah, it seems like there's doubt whether there can be enlightenment without any understanding at all.
Sarah, you spoke earlier of something about having the merit.
Past merit.
Having past merit.
The Pali is pivikata punya.
Right. What exactly do you mean by that? Can you explain?
Well, if there haven't been the past good accumulations and past good deeds, we wouldn't be here listening to the Dharma for a start.
Mm.
So there have to be the past good accumulations and deeds in order to listen to the teaching. So it's given as one of the conditions for development of wisdom. Meeting the right person, hearing the teachings, past merit. Or one may be in a Dharma discussion listening to someone who can explain the Dharma, but because of one's accumulated akusala, one may not be able to hear or appreciate what's said. So there has to be the past merit.
There has to be the kusala gama to meet the right person or hear the teacher.
Mm, that makes sense.
As well as the accumulated understanding for it to make sense. Yeah.
So there can be the accumulated understanding, but there can also be the condition where there's no conditions because of past bad
Like if you were born deaf, you could be
why in the I was talking about the levels. That's why in the absolute sense it comes down to this moment, because even if one is listening and hearing and having the Dharma explained in the right way, if there's no wise attention, if akusala cittas are arising or there's attachment to having sati while one listens, then there's no benefit at that moment at all. So in the absolute sense, it comes down to moment to moment. And in fact, as we know, even while we're here listening, moments of wise attention, moments of unwise attention.
Whatever arises in the moment, that reflects your accumulations. If there's moha, means you've accumulated moha. If there's panya, means you've accumulated panya. And this moment conditions the next, and further accumulates.
But the idea that the idea that nothing immediately can be done about it is terrifying.
But that's the nature of Dhammas, because whatever is done is done by Dhammas.
It also shows, though, that everything is anatta, doesn't it? So that's a type of wisdom that knows that. So Panya sees it as uncontrollable, then that's not terrifying, because Panya is kusala. But if you're thinking about it from a self view, then it does sound scary, perhaps. You see? But if it's just seen as everything is anatta, then it's fine. It's with kanti too. It's with patience. So it's good.
Could be joyful.
Did I say that right? Did I phrase that correctly? I sometimes hear people saying that anatta is scary or something, but it's only scary if there's a self, right? If everything is understood as really no self, then it's not scary at all, because anatta, it's no way it's scary. It's very it's the opposite.
Separate.
There's I don't usually quote this person, but there's an excerpt from one of Jack Kornfield's book, Path with a Heart, where he goes around asking different people what the essence of Buddhism is, and he meets a Sri Lankan monk, and the Sri Lankan monk says, "No self, no problem. No self, no problem. No self, no problem."
That's true. That's true.
What about problem? It's problem with that self.
It it is true that when there is more appreciation of anatta and conditioned realities, one's less disturbed by stories and all the things one's used to thinking so much about in terms of people and things, because there is a growing appreciation that there are just dharmas and they are anatta, so they can't be controlled anyway. So I think it does lead to more equanimity too.
At moment of panya. At moment of panya.
That means the next moments might be lopa or something else.
Anything.
So that's a good point. Even though understanding may be growing, like Ajahn and Jill just said, doesn't mean there mightn't be moments with fear or terror or whatever, you know, anything bad can come into, of course, because of the accumulations and because realities are anatta, because they're conditioned to arise.
The accumulated tendencies are so strong.
One of the jnanas is called Baya jnana, and it says knowledge of terror. What does that mean, knowledge of terror?
Baya jnana.
Seeing the danger. Yeah.
Well, one it says Baya jnana, and the other one says Adinna vajnana. One is terror.
And Baya jnana. It depends on understanding at that very moment. To see it as Paya or as Adinava.
Right, so it's obviously Kusala, but it just sounds like real dosa, knowledge of terror.
Because it follows on from Pankayana, which is the knowledge of dissolution. It's that realization of the insubstantiality of phenomena that leads to the terror.
Well, I think it's the understanding the danger and the harm of conditioned realities.
This is
the beginning of the way out of samsara, because now we think of conditioned dharmas, we think of life as being something that's so good and wonderful, but there's a growing detachment or
a growing understanding
away from what is conditioned, seeing the danger and harm of it, because dharmas are, because they've been appreciated as being impermanent. So it's not that any terror or dosa is arising.
Yeah, it does say knowledge of terror, doesn't it?
It's knowledge of terror, not fear of knowledge.
May I ask a question about the Brahma Viharas? In your book on metta, you talk about a particular order for the cultivation of the Brahma Viharas, metta being the first, since each of them is a supporting condition for the following Brahma Viharas. And there's a quote in the Atasalani about after working for the good of others, cultivates compassion when they're overcome by sorrow, and then sympathetic joy by rejoicing in their prosperity, and lastly he should practice equanimity because there's no further work to be done. And I've also heard you saying on tape about equanimity being the hardest, but do you think that to suggest an order may be misleading, or do you think that metta is always most common or the least?
The origin of metta can lead to four jhana, the first, second, third, and fourth, but the last one has to be after attaining the fourth.
Yes.
It has to be the fifth one.
Yes.
Okay.
Has to be equanimity, you mean? Mm-hmm. Yes, has to be the fifth. So when it's referring to this order, do you mean that this is in the context of jhana?
But it does mean that there can be metta, ubekha, only in the fourth or fifth jhana. No. It can be any time. It depends on accumulation.
Right. So when you refer in your book to this order in daily life, as you say, it depends on accumulations, whether metta arises or there's equanimity or compassion, different accumulations. So what is the purpose of referring to the order in the daily life context?
Usually, do we have metta or upekkha?
Metta is more common.
This is according to usually.
Yes. So what you would say is usually for most people there is less equanimity than metta or...
Upekkha for people, though. We're talking about...
Yes, we're talking about the Brahma Viharas. Yeah. And when it talks about metta as being the support for the other Brahma Viharas, in what way in daily life is metta the support for the other Brahma Viharas?
We have to understand what metta is, to be friendly. Like now, see, kusala citta, to be friendly. Is it now?
Mm-hmm.
Really? Yeah, different moments.
Yeah.
But when time comes, when your friend or anyone has such unhappy state, like parrot and what, sorrow, sickness, things like that, what do you feel at that moment? Kusala or metta or karuna?
Depending on accumulations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you can see that is it harder than to be just friendly?
Mm-hmm. Because I think, as you said before, there can be metta any time, and that's with people, whether they're sick or healthy or things are going well or badly, one can be friendly. Yes.
But isn't moments of kusala also with metta? A moment of karuna also with metta.
It depends on what degree. Because at that moment of having karuna, it means that you also have metta to be friendly.
Right.
But it depends on whether you help or not help.
Right. And same with upekkha, there must be metta.
To be friendly.
Right.
But you can understand that it's impossible to help or something like that.
Right.
Yeah?
So,
and the mind is kusala, not disturbed by akusala.
So when it refers to the order, then it's referring to what is most common or most likely.
Yeah, for example, right now, there can be friendly, metta, but do you also understand the upekkha, not being disturbed, whatever happened to whoever is here?
Not so easy. All of the Brahma Vihara can be developed outside of a Buddhist sasana, so they don't need understanding of a metta.
But it can be by conditions, accumulation. Buddhism does mean that it belongs to the Buddhists.
Mm-hmm.
It's so universal. Dhamma does not belong to anyone at all.
Okay. Then, since it's not specific to a Buddhist sasana, people who have strong wrong view about self can still develop the Brahma Vihara. So why not try to develop metta? Even don't worry about the fact that it might be with wrong view or not. Why not just try to develop metta?
Intention to develop, or you see the benefit of kusala?
Both. Can you play both?
Just one. Choose one.
Because we can think about people and countries and situation, but what about the mind which thinks at that very moment? Is it kusala or akusala? Instead of being concerned for other matters or subject, what about this moment which thinks this world, one owns world, to be cleaned up, to develop more understanding, or just leave it and think about the others with lobha and dosa?
Well, that's common.
Yes, but right understanding can bring about all kusala, all kinds of kusala.
Okay. So you're saying the Buddhist way is to have right understanding and
that's
the Brahma Vihara.
Yeah. Okay. To have right understanding.
Metta is also conditioned. I mean, no one can make metta otherwise. You can't just decide to have more metta or develop more metta.
So I just want to go back to, because this idea that, okay, in Satipatthana, that one should be aware when there is a kusala in the mind and aware when there isn't and so on and so forth. But there's another sutta, I think in the Majjhima Nikaya, where the Buddha talks about when a kusala arises, about pressing the tongue against the roof of the mouth and using all this force to try to prevent
yes.
these mind states arising.
And there's no conditions for Satipatthana to arise. There can be other conditions for other things to arise.
But then this suggests that effort is needed to suppress these or to get rid of these states.
Who can have effort at will?
it's different conditions. That moment may be appreciation of the danger of kusala, and there are no conditions for understanding reality, but there may be understanding to appreciate the difference between kusala and akusala and certain actions taken, you know. But when most people read this and think about it being as something they need to follow, they're doing it with wrong understanding, and that's not the way it should be.
At the moment of thinking, there is effort already. But you think of making the next moment effort.
Mm-hmm.
All right? But is it possible? Because each moment has effort except some moments of jittas, like the vipanchavinyana, the seeing, hearing, so forth. So no need to think, to do, to make, because it's already conditioned. At moment of thinking, there is virya. And next moment, there is virya as well by conditions. No one can make it to arise at all. Which one can be made by anyone? Which moment? At moment of thinking of effort, there is effort.
You mean there is effort anyway?
Anyway. When it's such and such
because
jitta.
Because effort arises with almost every jitta.
If I may, I just want to stay on that because, again, going back to that particular sutta, are you saying that it's a matter of degree and, again, the circumstances that if it's possible, you know, the best degree would be that Bunya saw the realities as they arose at that each moment, those moments, and that rather than blurting something out that was a gusala, it's better to hold your tongue if that's possible, you know, if by being reminded, prompted citta can stop you from telling someone off, being rude to them, then that's better than not, than just letting yourself go. Is that what you're saying? That there are degrees and that we, you know, that the Buddha, again, taught to the degree of understanding. But if we have the understanding that of there is no self to push the tongue against the roof of the mouth and stop, you know, some bad words coming out, that's the best degree of understanding the hardness of or whatever is happening at the time.
There are degrees, but it's the understanding of degrees. For example, right now, we are talking about degrees, but what degree of understanding is right at this very moment? No understanding. And keep on thinking about different degrees again without understanding the degree of citta which conditioned citta to arise right now.
So much of the time, though, we think that we or I have the ability to do it. That's the ignorance of the thinking of the I, that we somehow have that incredible will to maybe stop speaking something that's already coming out of the mouth. And that has to also be conditioned. That's that all of that up until that moment is conditioned, whether you speak kusala or akusala. But we think that it's us that does it. And then that whole sense of will, that we somehow can make ourselves be something, that we have this idea that we should somehow only be thinking, you know, positive thoughts, or that we somehow create our reality. I think that's a really big thing right now in the West. Everybody thinks they can create their own reality, that we are the creators of today. If we have positive intention when we get up in the morning, then the day is going to be fantastic. We have to, if we think bad thoughts, then everything's going to be bad. So I think there's all that ignorance and that delusion. We don't realize it's conditioned. We think it's self. We somehow have to be stronger, more focused, more effort.
It's like the answer to your question about Satipatthana. Because we are thinking, keep on thinking about future or the story, but what about reality right then? And if there is no understanding of reality right then, it is not Satipatthana at all, never be. So Satipatthana is the understanding of our reality at that very moment which has arisen. So Sati follows or just be aware of that which has arisen, which appears.
So that's the characteristic, is the nowness of it.
Mm-hmm.
In that split second, falls away, gone.
That's the thing about future, yeah, or the future story. But it's the moment of attending to that which appears because it has arisen by conditions.
And that's regardless of whether one's pressing one's tongue against one's palate or blurting out, or just still realities either way. So I think the Buddha described all kinds of daily situations. Today he probably uses the example of counting one's breath or whatever, because this is what people do. But regardless of what one does or doesn't do, it's by conditions, and Satipatthana can develop. Mm-hmm.